Hey guys, it's Tom here, and I got a quick heads up for you. My mom is trying stand-up comedy tonight. That's April 29th, and you can see it online on bonfirealive.com. Bonfirealive.com tickets are only $5, and it's going to be me, my mom, Amy Silverberg and her mom, Andrew Michon and his mom, Mike Malloy and his dad, Greg Stone and his dad, and it's going to be a great time. Bonfirealive.com. Come see my mom do stand-up, and don't you heckle, you son of a bitch. All right, enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I'm Tom Takar, the Wolf of Dog Street, joined, as always, by the Prince of Snarkness himself, Tommy McNamara. How are you, Tommy?
Good. I took a bunch of acid for this one. I'm going to be all psychedelic talk because we're talking dead, baby.
Seek help. And if you at home are struggling with drug addiction, call 1-888.
Just call me.
Yeah, call Tommy. He'll come take all your drugs. We have a very special guest today. The hot dog man himself, Dave Wade's here.
Zip zap.
How are you doing, Dave?
Well, you know, I'm doing good. I saw the other day you posted you did your 200th episode or some shit. And I was like, man, is that where I fall on Tom's friend list? I don't even make the top 200 cut.
202, baby.
I was like, yeah, damn, we hug out, bro.
Hey, I want everybody frisbee. If you're a comic listening to the show, just know that is exactly how I do it too. I've booked people based on how tight we are. So if you were curious, some people got four episodes, that's them sliding down my friends list. I had to rebook them and be like, no, now you're number 108. Jane Torres.
Well, Dave, you did the old podcast way back in the day.
Which one?
Girls Night with Tom Tico.
Yeah, you did.
Tom Brady.
That's right.
Oh, that was, he had to transition. He trans into the car.
Yep. Well, and you know, let's just say the appearance didn't go so hot, and that's why you're number
two. I'm
playing, Dave.
I had no idea. I can't even remember that I did Girls Night.
I also forgot. that's a relic from another time. I thought about bringing Girls Night back, just as like a shorter podcast to do like 20 minutes a week or something. And then I remembered that that we already struggled to book guests for this show. And I was like, oh, the thought of having to book for two podcasts was really stressing me out.
Girls Night was funny. It was like you would always set up the premise that you and the girls were going to go out, right? And you. Mm-hmm. You want to get wild and drink apple teenies or something, yeah?
The whole idea was that it was a podcast for women to listen to while they were getting ready to really party it up. And wonder why we couldn't quite find a fan base for that one. but the people who liked it are great. And I still get messages about fucking Girls Night. So that's why I was like, maybe I'll bring it back. I still think I thought about making it a Patreon thing where I was like, I'll just do it. We do it for Patreon, but now we already have a Patreon, so whatever.
Is Girls Night still available?
I think so. I'm pretty sure people can still listen to it. Yeah, because every once in a while I still get Podomatic reports that are like four people listen to it this month or whatever.
This
like,
decade. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, man, we're excited to have you. It's one of those things where I don't think to book people for it because I feel like I'm bothering people. And me and Tommy both do all this where it's like, I feel like I'm bugging people unless they ask me about it specifically. Or if I just saw somebody and I'm like, oh yeah, they gotta do it. So,
I mean, that's usually how I talk myself into being overlooked. I'm like, these guys are busy. They're in New York, you know, but, but then once everything became, you could do it over the internet. I was like, ah, come on. One of these days you gotta, come on. We're in multiple text threads together.
I know, but the second you brought it up, I was like, of course. But it's like, look at that group. It's like, I forget to, I never think to ask anybody because I don't want to, but you know.
It's also long distance if we zoom to LA. So it's a long. It's a long
it actually costs us extra to record right now.
Did you have to talk to a Zoom operator and they had to plug in the things?
Yeah, it's an old timey switchboard.
Oh, who you want to Zoom with, Ethel? All right, beep beep. All right.
Hot riffs coming at you. How you been doing, Dave? Are you doing stand up out there? What's going on? What's the story?
Just starting to slowly creep back out there. The improv is doing like a mic 3 nights a week. I go 2. I don't want to milk it, you know.
Yeah.
Once I got like in the preferential, the elite status of the mic, where they'll throw me up whenever I don't want to milk it too much. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure.
I want to have the other mic people laugh at me. You know, I don't want them to be like this guy again. You know?
Yeah. That's a fine line. That's interesting. They were doing that. They were kind of doing a version of that at the Cellar before indoor shit was open here and before vaccinations were readily available. It was like basically an open mic that they were doing at the Olive Tree but it was for like, you had to be into the club, but it made for most people. But I felt that way too, where I was like, it was kind of like a text and you get to do it, but I was like, I'm not going to do it every day. That seems shitty to like take a spot every day. But some people were there every day and I was like, you're crazy. That was weird because it was like a restaurant. It was like a dinner thing.
I mean, that's the one thing the pandemic has taught me is that I probably need to do comedy like 3 nights a week. That's probably, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm probably better if I only do it 3 nights a week or 4. Mm-hmm. If I do it 7 nights a week, you know, I don't know. It loses something, you know? You don't give a shit. If you do it like... Have you ever done it like 20? I'm sure you guys live in New York, so you've probably had those runs where you've done it like 20 something days in a row. And then by that, there's like a point where you hit like that real hot, you become like, I'm invincible. And then then you're up there and it just seems like you're just saying words and they don't even mean anything.
Yeah. I heard Sam Riel talking about this the other day and I kind of liked it where he was like, cause I'm kind of in that mode right now where I'm like, what the fuck am I even doing? I have 3 spots tonight. And I'm like, I got on one of them. Maybe I can work out some stuff, but it's like, I'm in the same boat. I'm like doing old stuff to try to remember it and like get back in the, I want to have good sets now again, you know, cause things are, you know, starting to get kind of normal. And, it sucks. Cause then I like woke up with a panic where I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm like going on stage doing the same shit I've been saying for 5 years. Who gives a shit? What's the point of this? And then I heard Sam Riel say this thing where he's like, he purposefully sets up a bunch of sets so that he does hate the material, you know, after a little bit. And then he's like, now I have to write or else my punishment is I have to keep doing these jokes. And I liked it. But then if you don't actually do the writing, you're just punishing yourself. And so, it sucks. But it's also not an easy time to try out new shit that's not COVID related, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I've been recording my sets like I'm a first year kid, you know, I'm like going back to, I'm like, man, I wonder if I've been recording my sets all these years, if I wouldn't have been like successful.
That's what they say. I'm in the same thing. I did Mohegan Sun last week and I recorded all my sets and I was like, someday I'm gonna listen to those.
Yeah, the longer sets are tougher to listen to. I mean, I like when I go do like a 7-8 minute set, I'll record that because I'm trying a lot of new stuff out. I hear the stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I hear you, brother.
But, well, you know who mixes up their material all the time? The masters of improvisation, the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, baby. You're here to talk about Grateful Dead, Dave. And I'm just going to come right out in front of it and say this is a band I knew and kind of still know nothing about. So I'm excited to talk to you about them, get a little glimpse into Grateful Dead. Tommy, do you have any background with this band?
Well, today I watched 3.5 hours out of a 4-hour documentary about them, so I have that fresh in my mind.
You watched The Long Strange Trip?
I did. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's a thing where if I watch a documentary about any band, I will love them immediately. Just something about music documentaries. I am such a sucker for them. But I thought it was really good. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's in four episodes. It's not a 4-hour documentary.
It's like four episodes. Yeah, I mean, it's really well done. And I feel like it's a good introduction to the band and the scene and all that sort of stuff. If you've never seen it.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's pretty wild. Like that phrase, what a long, strange trip it's been. I mean, that's the Grateful Dead. That's in the lexicon. You know, if anybody ever says anything about a long, strange trip, that is the origin is the Grateful Dead. I mean, that's a pretty wild thing that they put out in the, you know, universe. I think there's a lot of misconception. I mean, obviously there are known for like the long noodling, but the studio albums are great. Like the American Beauty and can't remember the Working Man's Dead. They both came out in the same year and they're like country rock almost essentially. And like all the songs on the studio albums, they don't fucking noodle around. They were trying to make hits. They were trying to sell out. Not in that album, they were kind of trying to sell out. Those two albums, they came out in 1970. And before that, in the six, like they had, I think their first record was like 66. They were doing like really far out psychedelic stuff where it's like barely even they're songs, but they're not like traditional style songs. And then by the time like 70 came around, like the record company was like, bro, what are we doing here? You know, this shit's wild. You know, how are we supposed to fucking market this? And then they were like, all right, they started listening to like country radio and they started bringing in like folk rock. And then they made like more traditional style songs and shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised listening to them and I also, by the way, I appreciated that when you sent the songs over, I was very concerned that I was about to get a list of like, here's this one song, but you got to get it from the Garden in 64. And this one, that's what a lot of these live, like bands that do good live shit. It's like, I got to track down 12 YouTube videos and it sucks. But you just sent me the straight up song. So I just went with the studio ones for all of them for all of them. Except for Cassidy, which we'll get to in a second. But before we get too far in, we do have a segment to get to, which is where we hear from the owner of the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana, Jared Thompson, our resident snob. He hates a lot of music that we talk about, although not a lot of the stuff we've been talking about lately, because a lot of it's been appreciation shit. But I'm very curious what Jared's thoughts are on the Grateful Dead. I'm pretty sure I've heard him recently say that he had like a second look at them and enjoyed them, or he got into them somehow, but I could be wrong.
He got into it. He bought the shoes, bro. I was there in like October and he came, cause he knows I like the Grateful Dead. And then he came in with the shirt on and like he bought the Nike release, like these shoes last year, the Grateful Dead Dunks. And they were like, they're like furry and they have like the Grateful Dead bear on them and shit. And they sold out like immediately. But of course, Jared, he had a pair of them and shit like that.
You know, Bill Walton would have rocked those so hard if they were around back
in the day. It's funny you say that, because that's like literally the only thing I know about the Grateful Dead is that Bill Walton liked them. When I watched, there was this old Bill Walton documentary. There was this series on ESPN Classic called Sports Century. And it was really good. It was before 30 for 30. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I learned about Bill Russell and John McEnroe and like all these guys old tennis people, like all these random ass athletes. I learned their whole backstory and I was like, every one of them was good. But then, 30 for 30 came around and blew him out of the fucking water. But I learned a lot. There was a long chunk of it about how Bill Walton loved Grateful Dead. And I was like, oh, good for him, man. I don't know. His career, it turns out, just there wasn't enough turmoil in his life to fill out the shit. So, all right. But here's Jared Thompson's thoughts on the Grateful Dead.
What's up, y'all? This week, we went to Jared. The boy's going to have Dave Waite on defending the Grateful Dead. So it was good to see you, Dave, recently. Dave came and did the Comedy Attic right before he went back to LA, which was really nice to see him. And he's just great on stage. So the Grateful Dead, I'm a backwards fan where I like probably 15, maybe a few more songs, but no live stuff. I'm just not, I can't, for the reasons that most people hate the Grateful Dead is why I don't like the live stuff. And, but the songs that I like, I love. And this kind of all started for me. My mom died the year that the Comedy Attic opened, and she had been a Deadhead for probably the last 10 years of her life. And, you know, she had a tattoo on her ankle and was super into it. And basically, when I was putting together the playlist for her funeral, her favorite song was Ripple. And it's just hard to deny that song's greatness. And it's just a beautiful song. And so I just started to listen to that song every now and again. And that sort of led me down the path of listening to a lot of the earlier records. And I really love, you know, like even the self-titled album, the first album, even though it's totally different than what they ended up sounding like, I love that record too. I also, crazily enough, ended up at their last show in the parking lot. I was, so at Soldier Field in 1995, I just graduated high school, and my parents got me a one-way ticket to, a round-trip ticket to anywhere I wanted to go. And I had pen pals in Madison, Wisconsin, and they basically worked in like the Shakedown Street, like the area, you know, the pre-show sort of festival area, and they sold stuff. I don't even remember what we were selling, but we could hear the show from, you know, from the outside. And it really was crazy to be there and just see all this. So anyway, all right, I love you guys. I will talk to you later. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Jared. What do you think about what Jared had to say, Dave?
I mean, I thought it was pretty moving, you know. Mm. You know, the stuff about his mom and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I did put that song Ripple on my list. I mean, yeah,
should we go ahead and listen to Ripple, just because he listed two songs that you have on here, I believe.
I mean,
also mentioned Shakedown Street, which I think you had. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that when I made that list, I mean, I tried to pick as many diverse sounds of the band, because when people say they don't like the Grateful Dead, I will say, well, you don't really like American music, because that's what they did. They played all sorts of different forms of American music. Mm-hmm. You know, they played like the blues and country rock and country. And I mean, they sometimes played straight up country songs, or, you know, then they'd play like Zydeco and all this other, you know, and then the improvisation is all from like jazz and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they traditional folk songs. So they're just, and then there was some disco influence. So I don't know. Am I doing a good job?
I heard that when you said that to people, you said you don't like Grateful Dead, you don't like America, and you can get out. Speak English is what you say to them.
What are you? What are you? You're not some sort of hippie. You're not making your own soap. Better get out of America.
Get out of my country, then.
This is just one big commune, man. It's just one big drum circle here, bro. It's all peace and love. What do you like, guns? You better go to Canada.
All right, let's hear some of Ripple. Is there any specific part of the song you think I should start with?
I would say the last minute of the song is really good. I mean, the whole song's pretty good, but
Of course. But I mean, if you had to hear 30 seconds, I just don't want to.
I would say the last. Yeah, last minute or
last. The last minute here.
Okay.
You choose to lead, must follow. But if you fall, you fall alone. If you should stand, then who's to guide you? If I knew the way, I would take you home. La da da da, la da da da, la da da da, la da da da.
Yeah, I mean, the last line where he's like, if I knew the way, I would take you home. There's something about that line that always, I don't know, it hits me in a way that, I don't know, it overwhelms me sometimes.
Yeah.
Is that gay? Yes. I don't know, you can't say that anymore, can you? Did I just cancel myself? Dave just did a self-cancellation.
Look, I think it's perfectly fine. I talk on this show all the time about how lyrics fucking mess me up. Like that's my favorite thing about listening to music is the lyrics. So no, I think you're good. This song, which was recorded in a country folk style, was written by Jerry Garcia and Robert Hunter. Hunter was not a performing member of the band, but wrote the lyrics to many other songs. Hunter's words were often very poetic, lending themselves to interpretation. In this song, he writes about the joy of music in the air and how we must all choose our own path.
I love when people's words lend themselves to interpretation. I think that's so nice.
Well, yeah, I mean, like that.
This is like, I have this big book here. It's all the lyrics.
Look at that.
Ooh. It's all the lyrics. And like, you know, they had like guys that were like essentially like poets that wrote the lyrics. You know, mm-hmm. Robert Hunter, he wasn't a band member. He wrote all the lyrics. He wrote a lot of the lyrics, not all of them. But yeah, there's a great podcast about the Grateful Dead called The Good Old Grateful Dead. And it just started last year. And they go through they're going through like almost every song and then like breaking down the origin of the lyrics and the interpretation. I mean, all their lyrics are like the guy that Robert Hunter, he was very, he never would like let on to like what the lyrics actually meant, you know, because like people, especially people that are tripping balls and listen to this music, they want to read in all sorts of like what this means and stuff. They're like, this means that, bro. And like, and so he was always kind of, he was very like coy, you know, and made it, kept it mysterious about what the lyrics meant. And sometimes he would say one thing and they would do another interview and say it was something else. Like it's just too wild shit just like that.
Me right off. You should be straight, Robert. I got some fun facts here. I'm going to do it in the form of trivia though, where, do you know what movie, this song is in?
Oh,
it might be more than one, but there's
I know
one
this right off the bat. It's The Talented Mr. Ripple, of course.
Yep, well, you got it. No, it's I'll just tell you guys because the TV show one is better. Unless you do want to take a shot, Dave, I don't want to stop you from getting one.
I don't, you got me. I know a lot about the Grateful Dead, but I don't know where this has appeared.
This was in the movie Mask, not to be confused with The Mask, which is what I was thinking when I read it. And I was like, I do not remember that.
Just a heartfelt song. Right?
the other thing, it was in the series finale or the final episode of a TV series that is very popular, amongst us at least. Do you know what series that would be?
Ooh. Can we do one hint on this one?
Freaks and Geeks?
You got it. It was Freaks and
Look
Geeks.
Look at that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I love Freaks and Geeks, but somehow I missed that. But pretty interesting. A little more trivia here for you, because I was just, like I said, I knew nothing about the band, so I was just doing a little look at the old Wikipedia. And do you guys know what their original name was?
I do, yeah.
Yes.
What do you got?
The Warlocks.
The Warlocks is right. And it was funny to me reading about this because it's like they were the Warlocks and then they had to, you know, cut it because they found out there was already a band that had the name Warlocks that already put out a record. And then it says the Velvet Underground also had to change their name.
That was the band. Yeah. They both changed their name.
Yeah. But was there not another band? This is making it sound like there was a third band. Is that not right? Was this
everybody's like, we're the Warlocks.
It's just funny that everybody's like, yeah, the Warlocks. It's like my buddy had a joke about how there's two different teams named Sox in baseball. And he's like, He's like, there's a meeting where they're like, all right, we want to be the Sox. And then another dude's like, no, we're the Sox. And he's like, all right, we all want to be Sox. that's Joe LaLonda. He's very funny.
I think Martin Short used to have, like, I guess in Canadian football, there used to be two teams named the Rough Riders, and there was only like 10 teams. And like Martin Short, I think he had this famous bit. He was like on Letterman or something, and he was like, the Rough Riders score versus the Rough Riders. You know, it was just like this big elaborate. But it's so wacky. Canadian football being so wacky. It's like 10 teams, two of them had the same name. Hey, bud, we're going to be the Rough Riders. No, bud, we're the Rough Riders, eh?
Okay. Hey, well,
sorry about that, eh?
we can both have it. See, that's the problem with Canada. Too friendly. and do you know where they got the name The Grateful Dead?
It was in the dictionary.
That's right. Garcia found the name in the Funkin' Wagnalls Folklore Dictionary. Ooh, I gotta tell you, I think Funkin' Wagnalls would be a good band name.
Funkin' Wagnalls. Hey, we go down to the beach tonight. Funkin' Wagnalls playing at the band show. We're gonna get some tasty marks.
Seems like they're a little more Wagnalls than Funks these days. With all this acoustic shit.
They just play Buffett covers. Boom.
it struck me as funny that they like every band was like, yeah, how about the Warlocks? They're fucking rules.
Well, yeah, the guys were like in their early 20s. I mean, Bob Weir, he had to get like Bob Weir, he's like the other guitarist besides Jerry Garcia. He had to get like his parents to sign off to run away with like a bunch of hippies because he was like 16.
Man, that is wild. All right, shall we hear another song here? What would you like to hear next here, Dave?
Well, I guess just Shakedown Street would be a good one to show the stylistic differences.
Hell yeah. All right, let's hear some of Shakedown Street. Let's get forward just a little bit. They were reading the funk part of Funkin' Wagnalls.
Yeah, I mean that song, in any version of the Dead or the offshoots now play that song. I mean that's when people get down at the show.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you've seen the offshoots. Did you ever see the Grateful Dead live?
I never saw the Grateful Dead live. I mean, I was old enough. I mean, I would have. You know, the first concert I ever saw was Pink Floyd at the Hoosier Dome in 1994. I was like my uncle took me. I think I was like 14. You know, I was like, I smelled marijuana for the first time at that concert. You know, but the Pink Floyd crowd is much more sedate but I didn't really get into the Grateful Dead until the past like 5 years. I mean, I had the greatest hits CD that came with from like the BMG, you know, remember they would mail you the
we had BMG.
You'd mail them a penny and you'd get 8 CDs. Yeah, so I had like that.
We were suckers for that in my house.
And when I got that greatest hits, I think it's called the Skeleton Key or something like that. It was like the greatest hits from like 66 to 72, but the Grateful Dead that I had heard at that point didn't sound anything like that, because, you know, it's on the list, that song Touch of Grey is, it sound, you know, it's like from the 80s. It was a huge music video and it didn't sound anything like. So when I got that skeleton key thing, I was like, I don't know. All right. And, you know, when you're like a teenager, I anything that's is a little bit challenging music wise is tough.
Yeah.
Like I remember, like I'm a huge Pearl Jam fan. I could have done an episode about Pearl Jam, but I remember like Pearl Jam, they were crushing it. They were huge. And then they put out this album called No Code, which is not grunge at all. And it's much more acoustic. And the songs, like, as I've grown older, I think are amazing, but there was like a huge, I mean, the album before it, it sold 7 million copies. And then that one sold like a million because it was like, it required more from the listener. It wasn't, you know, but so it took me a long time to come to appreciate the Grateful Dead. And it was because I got the satellite radio Sirius XM and they have a channel on there. And I found in traffic, if I put on like one of their like long noodly jams, that it kind of could transfix me and I wouldn't want to get out and strangle people, you know, like I was like, oh, it just took me two songs to get across town, you know, but it might be 45 minutes. you know what I mean? You know, but if you're listening to like real short songs in your traffic, you become very aware. But if one song is like 18 minutes and you're like, I mean, the one thing is that I think, it does require a lot from the listener to, you know, when they're like the live stuff, when they're on the noodly jam, but it's like a form of EDM. It's like analog EDM essentially. Mm-hmm. Whereas like it noodles off forever. And then eventually the beat drops or, you know, and the Grateful Dead, eventually you're like, boy, they've just went off into the stratosphere. I don't even know what the fuck that I can't remember what song it is. And then all of a sudden, all of a sudden they fucking will drop back into that song and it like blows your fucking mind, especially if you're like baked out or you're tripping balls. Uh-huh. Like if you're tripping and all of a sudden you're fucking in the matrix and you've lost your way and all of a sudden it fucking kicks back in. Or sometimes in the live show, it's like they noodle off into a jam and then they kick into a different song and you're like, whoa, that fucking blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds fun. That sounds I like the way you're putting it, because it's like I mean, I like that in some bands where they get away and then they come back. But it's we haven't talked a lot about jam bands on this podcast, but it's always tough when people are like, oh, you got to see them live. And that's why I'm glad you brought stuff that works in the studio and is like a different thing live, too.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the studio songs they wrote are really. You know, they're good songs and the good lyrics. And I think there's been a reappreciation. I mean, I think the guys from the National did like a huge tribute thing called Day of the Dead. And they got a bunch of indie rockers to be on it, like Wilco's on it and a bunch of other motherfuckers. I can't remember off the War on Drugs. And
you're speaking our language. We're both big Wilco people, and I love the National.
Maybe, yeah, so the National,
my favorite band right now.
The National, yeah, and they're on it. They did a couple of tracks on that. There's like 50 tracks on this thing, the Day of the Dead thing.
Oh, wow.
And then the last album, Bob Weir, the guitarist and other vocalist besides Jerry Garcia, he put out in 2016 called Blue Mountain. And the guys from the National are like his backing band on that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And it's all like, it's like Western song, you know, cowboy songs. And it's really good.
Hell yeah. Should we, let's hear another song. And then I got some more questions for you here. Let's hear, how about Fire on the Mountain next?
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Oh,
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that song bangs. It usually in concert, it usually goes with this other song, Scarlet Begonias. Yeah, so, like,
Uh-oh. Did we lose Dave?
Oh, no. Bad trip.
Oh, no. You lost your first second there, Dave. Man. All right, we're back. We had a little technical difficulty. I blame Zoom myself.
I use Zencastr. I never have any problem with Zencastr.
We use Zoom and we don't have any fucking problems with Zoom, Dave.
You just said you had problems with Zoom.
Yeah, we didn't have a problem with Zoom. No, but you were talking about when they play this song along with another one.
Scarlet Begonias. Yeah, so it goes Scarlet Fire. And, you know, those two songs together in concert is usually like 20 minutes if you put them together. So that's a little nutty. But yeah. But
I was
Scarlet Begonias, that song, like Jimmy Buffett will play. He puts a lot of the steel drum on it. So you hear
ding, Sublime ding, ding, used to ding, cover ding. That too.
Yes, Sublime did, yeah. But yeah, that Fire in the Mountain, it's got definitely a reggae influence.
Yeah. Oh, I could hear all that. I also, there's a Fire on the Mountain buffalo wing joint. So I'm sure that's a chill ass buffalo wing spot. I was like you were talking about with the traffic in LA, listening to this stuff chills you out. I had that where I was biking home just now listening to this, and I almost got killed by a truck because the guy tried to he didn't have the right of way, and he just decided he saw me and he was like, fuck you, and he just gunned it, and I was like, Jesus Christ. I had to stop real hard.
Was it Casey Jones driving that truck?
Yeah, what's that?
The Grateful Dead have a song about a truck driver on cocaine called Casey Jones.
See, that's a great reference.
He was a train driver. Casey Jones
driving
was
that
a real
train. Driving the train. That's
yeah, it. Driving that train. Well, Casey Jones.
Reference doesn't work. And
driving that truck. Beep, beep. Down high on the road.
High as fuck.
But no, it mellowed me out. And that song specifically, I was like, hell yeah, I'm cruising.
Yeah, that song is tight.
I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned it when we were talking about things you could defend. You brought up John Mayer playing with the Dead. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I think he's an excellent guitar player. And, you know, I think he's done the work, you know. I mean, I think the first tour or two around, people were pretty skeptical in the community. But now, like, I listen to the Grateful Dead radio. They have like they have their own talk show. It's crazy. Oh,
that's where I did my first late night set. Yeah,
it's wild. Like sometimes people, like especially when like Dead and Company's on tour or somebody, they'll be like, I went to the show and I was tripping and I couldn't find my car in the parking lot. Like people call it this. And then like these guys that are the hosts are like these crusty old hippies, and they'll tell some story about they couldn't find their car in the parking lot at some show and shit. But I feel like John, he's done a good job. And like, I mean, I've seen the Dead and Company like six times now or seven. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's always, he's bringing the vitality and the energy. I mean, I think John Mayer has wanted to do anything to try to make himself seem cool. You know what I mean? So he's like, really, he realized like whatever he did in his early 20s made him seem like a monster cheese dick. And then he's tried to correct that the rest of his life. And he still might. I mean, the one thing I don't like is like, he's very like, he says he's not going to do psychedelics and stuff like that. And I'm like, I guess he got real into weed. And then he heard Grateful Dead come up on Pandora, like the song Althea. And he was like, the song like really blew his mind in the way that Jerry Garcia played guitar and all that stuff. So that's what really turned him on. And he got turned onto it. You know, he didn't get turned onto it as a young man. It was in the past decade.
Yeah.
But what was my point? I wish that he wasn't, you know, because he's smoking a bunch of tree and then he's still like anti-psychedelics. Mm. And I'm like, bro, you're in with these guys. You got to at least trip once. Like you know, because it's Dead and Company is like three of the original members and then three other guys. And the other guy, this guy, Jeff Kamini, he's been with the Dead offshoot essentially since the Grateful Dead broke up. So he's been with these guys for like 25 years. So he's almost like a real member of the band now. Mm-hmm. And then this guy playing bass in Dead and Company, his name's O'Teal, and he was with the Allman Brothers for years. So he has that sort of street cred. Mm-hmm. The Allman Brothers was like the Southern Grateful Dead. And yeah. But the guy O'Teal, like, I think it was like on the second tour, he decided to take acid before one of the shows and went out and was like playing acid. And like, this is like a sold out, like fucking, like it was at the Gorge in Washington. And I'm like, if this guy had the balls to do acid, and he's a guy in the band that could be fired. You know?
That's wild. That's a ballsy move. That's a guy who probably does acid a lot and is like, I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what?
That's so funny. He could get, you're like, hey, I'm riding the line. Maybe it's a thrill for him. That sounds pretty cool, though, to be playing and you're just on acid and you're on stage. It's like, this is the craziest shit ever.
The thing that I think is crazy when I was watching the documentary is when they're talking about, like, they were filming a movie and they were doing a shoot and they put acid in the coffee. So all the like extras started accidentally taking acid. They tried to get the guy from like Warner Brothers to do it. It's like, well, this is just weird to me. Yeah. Like, it's what the like tricking other people into doing acid. Like, I don't know horrible. If that's really a cool move. Oh, yeah.
I think that is drugging someone, which is yes. very illegal. Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, you don't drink anything around the Grateful Dead. It's like, that sucks. Yeah, I just want to have a nice time.
yeah, you can't drink anything. Yeah, I mean, like the one guy, Robert Hunter, the lyricist, there was like some punch he was drinking punch and he didn't realize that multiple people had dosed it, so he had like a crazy acid trip. Oh, like, man. They said it like fucked him up for like a year and shit. But he wrote like some of the best Grateful Dead lyrics after that experience. So
I feel like punch, it's kind of on you. Like coffee, it's not your fault,
right? You know? Yeah,
but punch, you don't drink the Grateful Dead punch. Anyone would know that.
Yeah, the Grateful Dead were on like they had Playboy TV in the 60s. There was a Hugh Hefner hosted a show and he came out in his robe and tried to seem hip and they dosed everybody on the set, including Hugh Hefner.
That is wild. I heard, I mean, there's that old saying, if you hang out with Robert Hunter, there's going to be two punches. him punching you and then him dosing you with punch.
I heard that's when Hugh Hefner got the idea to have the ladies be naked. He had that acid trip. He's like, wait a second.
So then they were as clothed as you could get.
Oh, they were wearing heavy winter coats. The acid really opened them up.
What if we saw a little bit more?
All right, let's hear another song because we got a lot of business to get to here. So I want to hear what do you think, Cassidy next? I only found Cassidy live, which I really liked it. So I'm just gonna throw that bitch on. Let's hear Cassidy.
Fly to the sea.
Yeah, that was the first Bobby song. That's Bob Weir song. Mm-hmm. You know, in the Grateful Dead community, you know, people were like, oh, Bobby's song. You know, people are like, they love Jerry so much. But I think that a lot of the Bob songs are really good. And like in concert, they would kind of rotate back and forth. Like if you listen to like a live album, it would be like Jerry, then Bob, and then, you know, kind of back and forth. And sometimes it wouldn't always be back and forth. And then like, depending, like some of the keyboard players sang over the years, the Grateful Dead had a real Spinal Tap situation with the keyboard players. Like the first guy hit Pigpen, he died. Mm-hmm. And then they got another guy, Keith. Oh shit. I can't remember how to say his last name. He was with the band for like, seven years.
God Show or something.
God Show. Yeah, he got him and his wife Donna.
Yeah,
and they were in the band for 7 years, and then they left the band, and then they got this other guy, Brent Midland, and he had much more of a like a Michael McDonald sort of voice, and he sang some songs sometimes, and then he died, and Keith died shortly after he was fired. And then they got this other guy, Vince Welnick, who he made it till the end of the band when Jerry died. But then he killed himself like a couple years after, like maybe 10 years after that. So everybody that's played keyboards for the Grateful Dead is dead.
It's a hard spot. Damn.
There's a funny moment in the documentary where you're interviewing Keith and Donna, and they're talking about, or they're interviewing Donna, and she's like, yeah, one day me and Keith were listening to the Grateful Dead record, and he stopped, and he was like, I don't want to listen to this band. I want to be in this band. And then it worked, and they got in the band. It's like, that has to be the only time that has, like, that confidence is just, like, so insane.
That's what happened to me, where I was like, I don't want to read Playgirl magazine. I want to be in Playgirl magazine. And yes, you can see my spread coming out next week. I spread my butt. All right.
So that song, Cassidy, I think is like partially written about Neil Cassidy from On the Road.
Yep. That's what this is like, saying here. Yeah.
Yeah, they hung out with that guy. You know, I mean, that's the wild thing about the Grateful Dead, is they were like there at the beginning of like the counterculture, and like, you know, they played like the acid test, where, you know, essentially it was like a party where everybody took acid at like Ken Kesey's house, who wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's some pretty wild shit, you know? I mean, you think about like anytime you see somebody wearing like a tie-dyed shirt, I mean, that is in some way because of the Grateful Dead.
Right.
They were like the Johnny Appleseed of like LSD and because they had like this band of weirdos that would travel across the country, and I'm sure they probably turned a lot of people on a fucking trip in balls.
All right, we got two songs left here. I'm gonna play them pretty close to each other just so we can get to the next couple things, because we got a lot of comments, and then I also found a quiz that I want to do with you. The first one is Touch of Grey.
This is their big hit.
Hell yeah, let's hear Touch of Grey.
Tom, you must have known that one, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the only song I knew.
Yeah, that was like
it was the first one. It was the first one you sent, so I was like, oh shit, maybe I'm gonna know all of this. And then
Next thing you know, there's a fire on the fucking mountain.
I think you probably would know Friend of the Devil, because a lot of people have covered that one. But I felt like that one is kind of like their Stairway to Heaven, where it's like, it's good, I see it live, okay. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't... It's been done Friend of the Devil has been done so much by other people, and it kind of, I'm like, okay, you know, I don't know.
Fair. All right, let's go ahead and hear the last one on your list here, which is Throwing Stones.
Another Bobby song.
Let's hear Bobby. Oh, shit, sorry. Throwing Stones.
Oh, yeah. It's like their protest song about, you know, the politicians throwing stones at people.
Yeah, I hate it when they did that. I don't usually get political, but I don't think they should be doing all that.
Quit throwing them stones.
I went to a Biden rally throwing rocks at me, and I was like, hey, buddy, I'm about to jump ship.
He's like...
Fast check.
I tried to find as many songs that had a different time signature type stuff. You know, I think that's the, I mean, Tommy knows more about music, but the Grateful Dead, they use a lot of different time signatures than like the standard sort of band, I think.
Yeah, there was a really cool moment where they were talking about the drummer, the one who's still playing with them. I forget his name, but he was talking about like the first time they laid a 4/4, like a 6/8 on top of a 4/4. And that's when he was like, oh, we can do anything in this band. I was like, that's pretty cool to hear. Yeah, they were just doing really interesting stuff rhythmically.
Well, yeah, they have two drummers, you know. The Rhythm Devils. That's what Francis Ford Coppola, he dubbed them the Rhythm Devils. And then like on Apocalypse Now, he used those two guys like to make like drum rhythms and shit.
Oh, shit.
Like that.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
That's awesome. All right. So I found a quiz that I want to give you here, Dave.
Ooh, are you a deadhead?
It's along those lines. It's hold on. I got to pull it up here, and it's going to be a pain in the ass, but it was I liked it. It was the first one I've seen in a while that I was like, oh, this fits. So let me just pull it up here.
Well, while you're pulling it up, can I just say that my girl gave me that deadhead? And yeah, just to kind of pass the time.
Oh, your girl gave you that deadhead?
Okay, so now that we have gotten that out of the way. All right, here's the quiz. It's which Grateful Dead song are you? And
ooh.
Now it's the site is kind of fucking up on me a little bit, but I think it'll work well enough. The first question is, how many Dead shows do you figure you've seen? The options are none, 5+, 10+, or no clue, bro.
Oh, I guess 5+ for me.
All right. Off to a bad start. all right. Question number two, besides the awesome music, what's the best part of a Dead show? The crowd, the vibe, the beards, and the drugs. And when we say the beards, we are not talking about Tommy's girl who gives him deadhead.
So you're her beard. I see. I would say the vibe, man.
Okay. Good answer. The next question here is, would you say you're a hippie at heart, and the options are not yes and no, as you might imagine. The options are groovy, man, not really, and dude, I haven't bathed in months. Smell my dreads.
I guess I'm going to go with groovy, man.
You do have nice dreads, though, for the people listening.
They look smelly as hell, but they look good. Question four, besides the dead, what type of music do you listen to the most? Rock, country, jazz, or classical?
I would say rock.
All right. All right. There's seven questions here. I think we've done four now. So let's see what question number five is. It is, what do you do when somebody tries to harsh your buzz with a bad attitude?
Oh, that's a good question.
Ignore it. Do you offer, in quotes, help? Do you dance, or do you get even?
I think you got to dance, my man.
I was not expecting that to be the answer, but I love it. Dave's a dancing man. Remember, there was a time at the Cincy Brouhaha where it was like, I want to say it was a bad show. It was like, it was the one that was across from the Loud stage. And I think
yeah.
Going, and it might have even been raining, but that might be mixing up stories. And Dave just danced his whole set. It really brought me a lot of joy.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time I was known as Dancing Dave White.
I think we need to bring that time again. Let's make America great.
Francis
again.
Ford Coppola dubbed you that.
All right, question six. What crazy job sounds like the most fun? Fortune cookie writer, bed warmer, elephant dresser, or chicken sexer?
Ah, that was in Minari. They were chicken suckers. they were really in the movie Minari. They were chicken suckers. It's a true story.
I love that the real thing is the hardest I've ever heard Dave laugh.
In a very moving film.
A bed warmer. That sounds like a pretty rad gig.
Okay. All right. Bed warmer. I don't even know what that is.
I don't know, man. You're just getting somebody's bed warming up.
I got to hire one of those. All right, so this last one is a little tough because it says pick your tie-dye, and I'm just going to describe to you what the tie-dyes are.
Okay.
They're all images. One of them is a smiley face, uh-huh. One is a heart, one is a peace sign, and one of them is just the straight-up swirl where it's almost like a dragon's tail or something, you know?
Whoa.
Can you go over it again one more time?
It was a heart, a smiley face, a peace sign, and just a regular swirl.
The swirl. The everything else is too much.
Fair enough. Classic man. All right. So now what's going to happen is going to be very annoying, which is that I have to click through all this bullshit.
Fill out your social security card.
It might just give it to me because I already did this. Oh, I have to do this dumbass survey. So now I want to, what do you think you're going to get?
I think it's going to pick out of. It's going to give me a Grateful Dead song based on these answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, there's like 500. I don't know. There's like 1,000 songs that they fucking play.
I'd guess they're pulling from the top 10 is what would be my guess.
I have popular. The answer, but I would love to hear a guess before we go to it.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it'll be based on those answers. Maybe it's I think it could.
Song. There's three.
Alabama Getaway.
That's a good answer, but you got one, a song called Uncle John's Band.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty popular. I bet you if you heard that one, you would know it as well. Because that comes up on classic rock radio sometimes if you play that.
This is funny that it says this because based on the answers you gave, it says you're the sort of person who has some fears about the future, but also a lot of hope. You cast your eyes backwards to the good times and pray they come with you as you move forward into the unknown. Keep the faith. It'll happen, man. Wow. I don't know how they get that you're afraid of the future from the answers that you gave.
But they are pretty right.
It's because you only picked the swirl. You're afraid to make a statement.
Wait, is Dave tearing up?
The future is pretty gnarly. I'm not excited. I kind of enjoyed this past year because I didn't have to send out emails to a bunch of people like, hey, you think I could do your show? I've only been doing it for 16 years and I've been on TV fucking 10 times. Can I do your show, please? I promise I'll probably be better than most of everybody else on the show, but can I do it?
Oh, it's all back though. You got to do it.
The hustle, the grind.
All right. We are at our final segment before we rate the playlist here. And it's going to be tough because there's so many comments. We go to the peanut gallery each week where we hear from the listeners of the show and just the people who are friends with me on Facebook. But first, we go to the people who are on our Patreon. And the Patreon popped off for this one. There's a lot of thoughts about Grateful Dead. So first off, Ron Trimbath says there are some. Oh, wait, no, this is from the okay, this is from the Oscars thing. My bad. Jennifer Starla Miller says probably a bad thing that I audibly groaned when I saw the notification come across. I guess they're okay, but I can think of several better stoner bands to come out with a higher, no pun intended, level of musicality. Can't wait to hear the defense. All right, Starla. Dylan Pryor says, thoughts on Dead & Company? Does Mayer do Jerry justice? What do you think? You said he does a great job.
I think he's just doing his own thing, which I think is good.
Yeah, that's probably better.
I mean, it's not like they're... I mean, I think that's why, like, there's a band called Joe Russo's Almost Dead, and they're like a Grateful Dead tribute band, but they're reinterpreting it their own way. And all the guys in Joe Russo have played with members of the Dead. You know, the guys that are still living, they're all like Dead adjacent somehow. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about this music is if you, it's always open to interpretation and every version of it is different. And what I'll say about the live stuff is that sometimes they suck and that is cool. it's cool because it means they can also be great. Like what's considered their best live album is Live in Cornell. It's like from 1977. It's on Spotify. And you should, people that are like, I don't like the listen to that. I mean, it's like almost flawless, like in terms of like how fucking tasty the jams are and sick the grooves. And I think if people, you go, it just, it's a little, the music. I mean, if you listen to studio albums, it's not, most of it isn't that challenging. I think you could get your wrap your head around it. What was my point? I just went off on a tangent. Sometimes I start talking,
and then you said that's cool when they suck, and
oh yeah, it's cool when they suck because it also means that they can be great. I would say the majority of bands that you go see live, they play the same set every night, and it's almost like you could hit like you could just hit play and you'd be listening to the studio album and you're like, okay, I mean, I guess that's cool. And you want a band that's note perfect, but I don't really think that leads to like moments of like, oh fuck, right. You know, like that moment that blows your mind. Like Pearl Jam, you know, is not a jam band by any stretch of the mean, but they did it adopt the Grateful Dead model of playing a different set almost every night.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a core of hits. They have enough hits that they'll play those each night, but the, you know, they play 30 songs and from night to night, 20 of them will be different, you know, and that's cool. And like the Grateful Dead, they're peaks and valleys, and like, and the fans get it. Like I've listened enough on the radio, like when Bob Weir, like he'll fuck up the lyrics sometimes, and when he'll fuck up the lyrics or miss the lyrics, you can hear the crowd like cheer and they think it's funny and that's fun.
Yeah.
You know, like they're like, oh, he blew it. Instead of being like, oh, I went to the show and they fucked up. And it's like, this is funny. Like,
That's a good attitude.
It's very like present and in the moment. It's not like you're seeing some like Kiss where it's like you're seeing like a Broadway show that has like a 50-year-old, a 60-year-old or man in makeup and spitting blood or something. You know what I mean? or some.
I love this idea because it's like sometimes, you know, you're on stage and you're just blackout drunk and you're slurring every other word. It's like, why doesn't the audience just fucking appreciate it? Dumbass. Like, we paid $100 to be here. Well, suck.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was definitely towards the end of the Grateful Dead. Yeah, Jerry was like very sick on drugs and anti-diabetes. And so he wasn't up to par and people did complain that way. But there were other times that.
Sorry, I just the fact that he had diabetes and they made an ice cream flavor out of his name feels kind of fucked up.
I heard he put diabetes in the punch sometimes, and he'd get all fucked up.
Diabetes.
Sorry, that was just tingling me. Like, what a cruel move to make a food that he couldn't have eaten. anyway, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
But I would say most band, the fact that it can be different every night, and sometimes it'll be great, and sometimes it won't be so great, is that's exciting.
I love that. It's fun, and it keeps it fresh. I enjoy that too. Let's tear through some more of these because there are, like I said, there's a lot of them here. AJB says, this is one of my dream bands for y'all to cover, a band I love so greatly, but my biggest frustration is that obviously I listen to their live albums, but I feel like a fraud because the only studio albums that I listen to are Terrapin Station and American Beauty. But that's more of a problem for the Deadheads that quiz people to see if they actually like the Dead. Also, Dogfish Head American Beauty Hazy Ripple is a letdown. It is embarrassing to call it a hazy IPA, and the Grateful Dead deserve a better IPA, but I also won't stop buying it when it's available. I feel you, AJB. I'm a sucker for a hazy IPA, and especially one with a theme.
I mean, that's the one cool thing is, like, once the more you get into it and you learn the song names and the different terminology, and then you go to Denver and then you realize every other business is named after a Grateful Dead song. You're like, oh, okay. And then the sandwich is the fucking, you know, I get it.
Zach Drake just brought up something that I just talked about. He said, I'm not big into jam bands, but I'd like to thank those who are into Grateful Dead. Without you, there would be no Cherry Garcia ice cream. A grateful man. Derek Leedy says, saw them a few times in college. Jesus, I'm old, but it's like the stupid joke about the 60s. If you can remember a Dead show, you didn't go. Oh, that's all the Patreon ones. The other ones are just huge business opportunities.
You know, my aunt made thousands of dollars a day working from home. Did you know that? Just 15 hours a week.
When I moved to New York, I got a temp job, and then I got one of those emails that was like, I saw an ad for it, and I was like, oh, I'll just fucking do that. I thought it was real for like a minute. Then I clicked on it. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, I can't wait to quit this bullshit job I have because I'm just going to leapfrog onto this thing. I'm going to be making a killing. And then so let down to realize that was not a legitimate option.
I have a very special peanut gallery thing that I wanted to do, which is that my mom was a big Deadhead, like Jared's mom. So I asked her for her thoughts. She said she saw I saw them 8 times my freshman year at Michigan. People used to write the set lists on their jeans, so by the end of the weekend, your jeans were filled with Dead songs. I thought that was very funny. We used to make fun of Keith and Donna God Show, I think just because their names were funny. I had a huge crush on Bobby Weir. He was so handsome. In Pittsburgh one night, I got up to the stage and was 2 feet from Jerry for 4 hours. He was a beautiful soul, an amazing musician, seemed to genuinely love his bandmates and the Deadheads. And then the last thing she said was, also, a lot of people in the parking lot were using whipped cream cans to do poppers, I think. 1980 was pretty crazy.
That was her version of someone said they were doing it.
Look at your cat was like, whippets, here we go. yeah. When you go to the show, there'll be people in the parking lot with the nitrous oxide tanks selling ice cold balloons. Ice cold balloon.
Oh my God.
Yeah. If you get a good deal, you get 3 for $20, bro. That's a good fucking deal. And then you're like, you're like, hey man, I'm fucked up. The crazy thing about doing whippets is it makes your voice do that. But everybody thinks that you're just doing that, like you're putting that voice on. You're like, hey, I'm fucked up. And they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, funny. And you're like, I'm not fucking around, bro. Oh,
that is great. Tommy, were there any notable ones from Twitter?
Yeah, there are a few. I won't read them all because I know we're running out of time. Yeah. But William Madison said, better than Fish, but worse than basically every other band. Andy Sanchez says, that's a band who had a member who named themselves after a Ben and Jerry ice cream flavor, right? Cameron Little had an interesting point where he said, they're fun and have some great live albums. Like any band, diehard fans can ruin their image, but anyone who vitriolically hates them can fuck off. This is another good one. Inadvertent Reply Guy wrote that the most annoying part of living in the Bay Area is hearing endless stories about countless dead shows from all the men over 50 that attended. And then the last one I'll read was Brandon Ream said, when I was younger, their shirts led me to believe the music would be much cooler.
Damn. I have to point out, so this is from the Facebook, Gilbert Lawnd said, do you know the top two shocking/shithead deadheads of all time? And do you know, Dave, who he's talking about?
I saw that it was Tucker Carlson and...
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, wait, what was the second one, sir?
Ann Coulter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Could you imagine seeing them at a fucking show? Just like all fucked
There's
up.
There's no way Tucker Carlson would take his ass to the fucking dead show. There with his bow tie on and a fucking dude fucking shirtless with dreads spinning a fucking glow stick in his face. He couldn't hang. He'd fucking flip out. He would.
That's so funny. Drew Waters, who is a doctor at the hospital I used to work at, in true dead spirit, you should ramble on for about 10 minutes on totally unrelated issues in the middle of the podcast.
Done.
We already do that. Joel C. McBlair said, about to say, has Drew not heard the podcast, which is a tell. which is also hurtful, Joel, but it is true. I make a point of doing that. Let's see. Adam Burke says, completely passed me by. I know precisely one song. It turns out I probably do too. Alex Price says, Shakedown Street is a legit bop, and the documentary Festival Express is amazing. Great concerts too. Jeffrey McDonald says, I won free tickets to see them post Jerry from a radio station once. The girls at their concerts really like to twirl around a lot. Well, a whole lot of twirling, and there were way too many people using hula hoops in the parking lot before the show for my comfort. The albums sound like country rock. I'm told the live albums are better, but I don't have the time or will to go down that daunting rabbit hole. What a weird complaint. So many.
Very anti hula hoop. Who sees somebody hula hooping and going, ooh, I don't like that. that's some real Footloose energy. You're the townspeople from Footloose.
That would be such a desperate like play for a sequel to that movie, where it's like clearly product placement.
The sequel to Footloose is Fox News.
Oh shit.
Boom. Burn.
Try not to get political on this show.
I didn't mean to get political.
Just playing, as Tommy says, Republicans buy sneakers too.
Republicans buy hula hoops too.
Tony Daw says, Bob Weir had some amazing facial hair.
He's known for his short shorts. He's like John Stockton in the short world.
Well, yeah.
if there was a short hall of fame for dudes that wore their shorts too short, Bob Weir would be in it. There's like, there's like a Twitter account called Bob Weir Shorts. Short shorts, and the guy would like write funny dead jokes and stuff. I think he went inactive, but it was a fun follow for a while.
Well, anyone who runs that account dies. It's kind of <They're all dead.
laughs> Oh, I gotta read this one. It's Tony Zaret says, got pretty into listening to them recently, just as relaxing background music. I think it's because to me, the concerts and even a lot of the studio recordings just sound like rehearsals, like some drunk guys warming up before a bar show. There's no pressure to really pay close attention. They hit on a catchy tune and you hum along for 30 seconds, then you can go right back to thinking about something else. Seems like the concerts would have been fun for that reason. I like reading the internet reviews of different shows. People are like, Jerry was absolutely on fire during this solo. It's just him going for a full 20 seconds without losing the beat. I know it sounds like I'm trashing them, but I'm not. They really are a one-of-a-kind thing in the rock era, and I can see why different generations keep coming around to them. Love that. Well put, brother. Aaron Lampert says, I love them, but they are kind of terrible at singing together. And then she posted a link here that I can't play. Gabe Kia says, greatest cover band of all time. And the last one I'll read here is Jeff Asmus says, people who hate the Grateful Dead are absolute fucking morons and unworthy of dignity or respect.
All right.
Jeffrey. All right. That brings us to the end of the podcast. We got one last thing to do, which is to rate the playlist. But before we do that, Dave, you get to give us your final thoughts on the Grateful Dead. You have the floor.
I just think whatever your thoughts are, you know, I get why some people aren't into them, but I feel like it's like one of those things where I think a lot of people are dismissive without ever giving it a chance. You know what I mean? They've associated with the crunchy guy that worked at their work and was a little too much, you know. But if you ever get a chance to go to any sort of Dead related you know, there's all sorts of the Joe Russo out here. There's one called Grateful Shred. And then I guess Dead and Company's coming back, and then Bob Weir, any of the stuff, you go, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. I think it's just a community of like pretty good vibes, and there'll be some sketched out people there, but there's sketched out people everywhere in life, you know? And the fact that people are coming together, and like, especially when they have like the parking lot scene with like, it's like you know, like football games, there's a big, everybody's tailgate. But what if everybody was tailgating, was like tripping or like smoking weed and didn't have any dad energy at all? They just had cool vibe energy. And there, people are selling like their own fan art and weird shit and ganja goo balls. And you can buy beers in the parking lot for like $2 from people, and you can do some nitrous, and you can experience a different, you can go visit the counterculture for a night.
It does sound horrible to watch a football game that way, but I'm nitrous'd out. No, I'm
you should have caught that.
You're just going to a Giants game. Everybody's sucking on balloons.
I just remembered I had a buddy who was a Packers fan. He was a roommate. He wasn't like, we weren't tight, but he was like an angry Packers fan. He would get all fucked up when the Packers would play. And it was the year they won the Super Bowl, and they were up so much on this team, and this guy like drops a ball, and the guy, and this dude freaked the fuck out. He's like, you gotta fucking catch that. And it's like, dude, you're up 5 touchdowns right now in the fourth quarter. It's over, man.
Also, you're not so part of the team. It doesn't matter to your life. Let it go. When people get too amped about sports, I mean, the older I get, I'm like, where they go, oh, we won today. Bitch, you didn't do shit. I saw you on the couch. You had nothing to do with that. And the guys on that team, they don't give a fuck about you, bro. They hate you.
They talk about you. They hate you. Yeah,
you cock block them at a fucking Applebee's and they're trying to pick up the waitress. You're like, can I get your autograph? Bro, I'm trying to fuck the hostess.
All right, we got to rate this playlist, and I liked this music. I found it very pleasant. I liked the song I knew was great. The only song I didn't fully love was Throwing Stones, and even that I still kind of liked it. So I'm gonna go high here. I think I'm gonna add it. So we rated out of 6 because it's 6 songs, and I think I'm gonna go as high as a 4.7. I'm gonna give it a 4.7 out of 6. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's not music I came up with. And it's, today's the first time I heard a lot of it, and I gave it a few spins and I enjoyed it. And, Tommy, what do you got?
I really enjoyed watching that documentary, and I enjoyed listening to your thoughts, Dave. I'm never going to be a Jam Band guy. It's just not for me. I think of it like peanut butter. I don't like it when it's crunchy. That's how I feel. but I really loved Ripple, and I thought that's a great song. I must have heard it in that Freaks and Geeks at some point, but that's just like a great folk rock song. So I was very into that, and I really like the. I don't know. I'm like I'd say more of a 3 out of 6 for me, but it's just not my thing completely. But I enjoyed talking about it.
Dave, right. You also get to rate the playlist. So what do you got?
I mean, I probably would give it a 5 out of 6 or 5 point. Yeah. I could have went just like with like American Beauty or Working Man's Dead and just picked 6 songs off of those albums. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they would have been a full representation of all the different sound. I tried to go as broad as I could with like, oh, you don't like folk rock? Here's something like with some funkiness to it, or this or that. You know what I mean? So I tried to do a wide range to try to capture everybody into the Dead cult.
Yeah, it's good to try and capture everybody. That's always a good plan.
There's this punch you can use that hurry the process.
Yeah, when you go to a show and somebody's like, here, drink this, do it.
You gotta do it, is what you're supposed to do.
You gotta do it. I mean, what are you gonna do? You're gonna go home and talk to your cat all night? It's not the end of the world. You'll show up at work the next day and realize everything's bullshit. You'll be like, oh, no. That's why people are afraid of psychedelics. They're afraid to realize, oh, all this is bullshit.
Yep. There you have it, people. All right. Thanks so much, Dave. This has been so fun. Is there anything you want to promote on the way out?
Oh, I have a new podcast called Riff City.
Ooh.
It's pretty nuts. We recently did an episode where we imagine what it would be like if the Sopranos had to deal with Godzilla. So Tony's pretty upset that Godzilla's fucking up New York, and he's mad about the Godzilla.
I can't wait to listen to that. You sold me.
So funny.
So it's a pretty new podcast. So we're working through a lot of stuff, but I think we did one with Seinfeld dealing with Jaws. That one wasn't as good, but it's still pretty nuts. That's Jerry.
Since the theme.
So, yeah, it's nuts.
Television characters dealing with fictional.
Well, sometimes with a lot of Arby's talk, it's probably the most pro Arby's podcast on the internet.
Hell yeah, dude. I was looking through my Facebook memories the other day, and I saw that I had posted that I was really interested in the Arby's Euros or Giro.
Oh yeah,
I was at my corner store, my deli or whatever, and I asked for a euro, and the guy was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And I was like, "Gyro." And
it's the New York. Gyro. They say gyro. Yeah. Well, I had argument with a New York friend about this because he goes, "Well, do you call it a euroscope or a gyroscope?" And I was like, "Well, those aren't related at all. It's a totally different thing."
A couple of years ago, Arby's had this thing where they had venison for like a day or something like that. But we didn't. I wasn't able to get there in time to get it. But
that seems wild to do.
Listen to Riff City if you like beef and cheddar talk.
Hell yeah. Check that out for sure. And I'm probably going to throw a bumper at the beginning of this too, because it's pressing, but my mom is doing stand-up comedy. If you're listening to this the week it comes out, it's a Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be on Zoom. You can go to my Instagram or my Facebook, and I've got the link up there, but it's at bonfirealive.com. And it's not just my mom. It's going to be a couple other comics and then their parents. It's Amy Silverberg and her mom. It's Greg Stone and his dad, who did comedy. So he's a ringer. And then Mike Malloy and his dad, Andrew Michon, and his mom, I believe. So they're all on it. It's going to be really fun. And then my mom's headlining, following everybody on her first try. So it's going to be quite a spectacle. And she's really excited, and I'm very excited.
Do you have a preview of what are your jokes you think your mom's going to do?
I have no preview. I'm very, she's going to tell stories. I think she's the, she was always funny at her, like at work and stuff. And so all these like coworkers or stuff and stuff, I think are coming to see it. So it's
gonna and be- she's going to be telling Tommy tales when you were young, you took shit in the bathtub or something crazy.
I never did such a thing. I never,
you
never- baths,
but, just did.
Also, I'll be at the DC Improv May 20th through the 22nd. So if you're in DC, please come out to that. I'm terrified that there's going to be a ton of empty seats and not just because of COVID. So please get out there. And Tommy, what do you got?
I'll be at the Lincoln Lodge in Chicago May 6th and 7th. And apparently with their limited capacity, every show has been selling out. So get those soon if you want to come to that. And I'll be me and Luke Mones are at the Bell House Outdoor May 15th for my New York friends. So come out to that.
Oh, can I have a gig. Can I?
Yeah.
Plug it. I'll be at the Laughing Tap in Milwaukee.
I'm all booked up.
May 14th and 15th. I'll be there at the Laughing Tap, Milwaukee. Come on out.
Get over there. Check out Dave and check out Riff City. All right. Get on the Patreon too. Patreon.com/standbyyourband. $3 a month. Get you bonus episodes every week. All right. Bye. Keep it crispy.